bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hi, everybody. That's me.
Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
Justin Robert Young.
Hey.
We're going to do a little check-in around the circle here about the different projects that we've been involved with. Justin has been doing the Raise the Dead, and he's got a new Billy Crystal podcast because he's literally going out of his mind. Bryce has got his video game newsletter, which he's been doing, and Brian, of course, has many, many different enterprises around the world. And so we're going to let's start with Brian.
Yeah, so I ran into a weird anomaly. So we talked before about how it's so important to have a mailing list and you want to train your audience to open stuff up. Once we hit the pandemic, a big part of the brand of everything we do on Scam Stuff is leading people towards that moment of being the most interesting person in the room, whether it's at the party, a get together, a family reunion, at the bar, whether it's because you want to meet a significant other or date or just, you know, introduce yourself. Obviously in a world where all of that gets put on pause, it complicates a lot of, hey man, buy this trick and have everyone be amazed by you. And so we pivoted, and the last three or four emails was the operating theory was, okay, during this time, I assume nobody's going to want to, you know, give us money so that they could go out and be the most interesting person in the room. But what we can do is train people to associate a new email from us with, there's something in here that's worth doing. So we started doing giveaways. We have a bunch of tutorials anywhere from like $2 to $5. And once a week, we've sort of just been saying like, hey man, normally this costs money, but you can have it for free. Use this downtime to learn a new trick. And the first one we did was about a month ago. And then we did a follow, and that one got, a good open rate on. So that's the whole thing, is we're trying to get to a better rate of people opening our stuff. The last thing we sold got an 8.5% open rate, and this is to about 100,000 people. Then the first giveaway that we did that basically had the message, hey, let's take advantage of this downtime to learn something. Here is a collection of how to palm cards. Normally it costs money. You get it for free. That got a 17.2 open rate, which is very good on a statistically significant 100,000 email list, 3.2 clicks. And then the first time we tried to sell something, it was like a soft sell. It was like basically, hey, if you're like us using this time to learn more stuff, here are three self-working magic trick books on cards, mentalism, and coins that we like a lot. As a matter of fact, you'll recognize there's 250 tricks in here total. You'll recognize a lot of these eventually showed up on Scam School and Scam Nation. Because we're able to wholesale them, we can get a discount. We're not going to make much money on this, but if you would like all three books, we'll go ahead and bundle them together for you. So that wasn't so much as a sales thing, so much as trying to position ourselves as a public service. 12% open. But then the last one we did, what do you think? And it's just a straight up, it's a 23-minute tutorial on the three coin trick. Andrew, you know it as a two in the hand, one in the pocket, classic of magic, right? We have a 23-minute tutorial on it that normally is $2.50. And the title I used was another free giveaway. Is that what it was?
Another free gift.
Yeah. What do you think the open rate on that is?
Fifteen.
22%.
22? I don't know if this is a glitch, but MailChimp.
Number Wang.
MailChimp is showing a 46.2% open rate on this, which is astonishing. For the full email list, I've never seen anything like it. And I don't know if it is a case of, could be a glitch, could be, because I don't think it's just the word free, because I ignore a lot of stuff that says the word free. What I suspect is that this is the fourth kind of email in a row where we're not really asking for much. We're just sort of trying to provide value. And I think that maybe, so, you know, your Gmails or your Yahoos or whatever, like enough people are opening it that it kicks it out of the spam bin, out of the promotions bin, and into the, hey, you probably want to look at this bin. And because it's got like 4.3% clicks, so that's like 5,000 clicks off of it. What do you guys think is going on there? Because it's a really short email. Mm-hmm. All it says is, you know, hey, here's a free thing that normally costs money.
I would be surprised if I think the interesting thing about the subject line, just another free gift, and I don't know if you A/B tested this or if there's another one out there.
Yeah, we just went straight with that.
I think it gets directly to the point, which is I have something for you, but it doesn't get into the minutiae of I'm giving you a new tutorial. This is just Brian is giving you something.
Yeah, I think it's a step further. It's that you have been missing out on the free things that I have been giving.
So you think, like, the important word is another and not free?
I think if we're going to parse it, right, I think that that is an intriguing word, right? It is a pattern that it's like, now I'm going to start watching a television show on episode 4 because my friends say that it's good.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, regardless, I mean, we're not making money on it, but I am really, really pleased that, you know, we talk about training the algorithm, training the people to associate, you know, your name, your value, your brand with being something worthy of their attention. It seems to be paying dividends in a time that you wouldn't think that there's not a lot that you can get done.
So I know that these giveaway emails don't have, you know, they're not really you're not trying to get turning people over necessarily into sales right now. Are there any other metrics that you are comparing the list against? Like, are you seeing a reduced rate of unsubscriptions, or I don't know?
Let me see. On unsubscribes, we only had 300 unsubscribes. So that is something that if half of the entire list opened something, no matter what the thing was, it could be, you know, a gold turd. I assume some people would be like, yeah, but it looks like a turd, and then unsubscribe, you know? So we only saw 300 unsubscribes. One of the things that I'm looking at is the traffic seems to be real, because like right now there are 22 people on the store. Today we've had 2,400 visitors to the store to get the free thing. Yesterday we had nearly 5,000 visitors to the store. So it's like, sales weren't crazy, but it's like every single one of those is somebody who possibly has never bought something from us before, who's now practicing, because you go through the full process. You have to give your name and your address and all that stuff. Then you apply the discount code that takes it down to $0. So it's almost as though you rehearse what it's like to be a customer, so that down the road, when we have something worth value, that it won't feel weird for you to go to a store called Scam Stuff and give us money.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you guys think that might be a real number then.
Might be. I mean, I repeat, follow, you know, but I certainly think that I know I opened one of them, because part of it was like another free gift. I'm like, well, I've missed the first one. And they're like, oh, cool. This is cool. Neat magic trick. So,
yeah,
I think there's that. But I think what you're doing is great. And that if, you know, people know every time they open up an email, it's not just buy this, and you've never been like that, but like buy this would people be used
there,
to like
there have
oh,
been
cool,
stretches where I think I've over harvested. That's one of the, when we wrote our mission statement, I made sure to put the word sustainably harvest attention and convert it into sales, because it is possible to, if you're just the guy who's always asking for money or always saying like, ah, we're so screwed or whatever, then at some point you stop even opening those emails. So this is an opportunity to water that garden and continue to have a reputation of being worthy of being opened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think this is a great time for that. You know, all the things that have kind of gone out of paywall, like if this is not the time for money, this is certainly the time where I think a lot of folks who are selling things are like, well, right now we can just give you more stuff. And hopefully by the time that you come back and you have money, you want more of it.
Bryce.
Yeah.
What's going on?
So yeah, I've been doing the video games with Bryce email newsletter every week. Once a week is kind of really what I've settled into in terms of, spending the right amount of time on it and having the right amount of content, especially as things have kind of dried up a little bit, on the gaming side, whether it's news or releases. But I have had a pretty good open rates, for the past few months. I think once I got that feedback from you, Andrew, about kind of honing in on subject lines, I've been at a pretty solid on initial sends. 66%, 51%, 65%, 62%, and I granted this is about 100 people or so who are reading, so it's not by any means large numbers or scientific, but I've been getting a lot of good feedback when I ask questions. I think we talked last time or a week before about like putting closer up to the near the top of the email, like, hey, if I'm looking for responses, put it up there, put it up front, and ask for it very directly. And that worked out really well. I got a bunch that I included on last week's email. So that's been pretty good. I feel pretty solid about it. And then in terms of kind of finding something to use that list for, I've been trying to time it so it's either Thursday or during the day on Friday, so that I can get people over to watch the streams that I do on Friday and sometimes on Saturday. Like we did marbles on Saturday during the middle of the day, and we had a ton of people play and watch, and that was a really good time. So I feel like I've been pretty solid on that, and just trying to find news stories. I think in terms of we talked earlier on weird things about science reporting and how you still have the kind of crazy content demands of like you need to do a million posts, and that means that they're not always great. I think blogs are having that same issue, and a lot of the places where I source news from are having some of that issue, where they're doing like a lot of entertainment reporting, and that's not something I would like to do. I'd rather just not do it. And so just finding content and trying to find evergreen topics or things to get people talking about. The thing that I got feedback on last week was like, hey, I just refunded this game and now I have a bunch of credit on Steam. If you had this $14 or $13, what would you spend it on? And I got a lot of good recommendations, and I even made a purchasing decision.
Which, by the way, this is a very good subject line. It just says, you got me to spend $13, and it has a gold emoji.
Yeah. And then it was, a lot of just feedback with people, a little back and forth, and then I got a plug-in for the stream. Oh, that button doesn't work. Uh-oh. That should have checked that. And then a little bit of news and writing stuff. So, I've been feeling pretty good about it.
Nice.
I think you're doing a great job, and I think that, some of the best email lists, are things just you build up over years, often... when we give advice to people, we've seen how people want that immediate gratification. But, Bryce, about building things and doing things over time. Mm-hmm. And I'm lucky, I've got for an author, I have a wonderfully large email list that I started building 20 years ago, but not really ever aggressively building. But over time, it's gotten to be pretty substantial. And I think that for you, putting yourself out there as a video game personality in person, I think you're doing, you're doing wonderfully well in between this and the live streams.
Thank you. I think when I first started talking about this on this program, I mentioned wanting to do stuff that you would normally just make a blog for, and it would just be a Medium blog or something. And one of the things I've started doing, which I don't know how much it's applicable to other types of email lists, but if when I write something or when I share it on Twitter, I can share a permalink for it. But there's not like a sign up thing. Like I've had people email reply to that tweet and go, I don't know. I mean, this is cool. I don't know how to sign up for it. So I've actually had to start putting in like a sign up for this email list that you're ostensibly on in the middle of the list.
Well, yeah, but it's all about the forward stuff.
I would bet that that belongs at the very top. And that's really not from any knowledge I have, but I know that Axios, the very first thing somehow, in fact, it's not even my email. I guess I was logged in on like the Monorogue or the Scam Nation email or something when somebody signed up for the Axios Daily, whatever. But the very first thing it says is, did you get this because it was forwarded to you? Sign up for it right here.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. That's on the free political newsletter. I got the same thing. It's up top with like other stuff because push comes to shove. If people are blind to it, then that's fine. But if they got it and they notice it and they want to sign up, like it's better to have that up top.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I hadn't considered that. Part of my thought was like, okay, well, they read, you know, and it's not at the bottom of the email, right? Like in this one, it's above the news article, so it's the third, I guess, middle break. And so I guess my thinking and putting it lower was like, well, people are asking me about this, it's because they've read it and they didn't see it. But you know, that's, you know, however many people did tell me, how many people didn't.
Yeah, I would imagine that the thinking is, if you got it forwarded to you, and that's the first thing you read, it says, was this forwarded to you? You think, yes. It's like, well, if you want to sign up, click here. It's like, we'll see. Then you read the article, and then you're like, oh, yeah, no, I do want more of this. And then you go back and you click the thing.
Yeah. So that's my update. Things are looking good.
Nice.
Justin, tell us what stage that you're at in either your therapy or your clinical diagnosis.
Forget Paris. That's the answer. No, I mean, I've actually had a good time with doing the crystal thing. It's I've tried to kind of because it is sort of a project for me more than it is something that I really like am working on. It's kind of more of a retreat of trying to hone certain skills and see how fast I can turn stuff around, how happy I feel about it. Like it's kind of a project without limits. You know, it's been good so far. It's, I can kind of add things and sort of evolve it. I mean, I think like 11 people are listening, which is probably, 12 people too many, but, it's been fun. It's been a good way to stretch my creative legs a little bit.
But I think, you know, that's certainly a thing we've talked about here. If you really want to create, you really want to do something, you're going to do it even if nobody's paying attention. And, you know, I get the, you know, I want to write a book, but I want to have an agent first. Or I want to do this. I'm like,
yeah,
that doesn't sound to me like somebody who wants to write. You know, that doesn't sound to me like that. And we talked about a lot about like, you make a thing, even nobody's paying attention. And here you've got this creative energy and man, in my own self-diagnosis of like when I go nutty is when I don't have a project. And when I get depressed is when I don't have a project. If I'm working on a thing, I'm not depressed.
Well, yeah, there's something that you can alleviate, right? You can release some of the pressure by just like making a thing and then all of your anxiety goes into the creative process. And that's what's been fun about this is just being able to kind of like come up with something and really make it my own thing that I'm happy with, and it'll be what it is. Really, the only thing that I almost I almost kind of regret is drenching it so much in the like I'm going crazy and that's why I'm making a Billy Crystal podcast, because like I almost wish that I would have named it something that wasn't a bit like it wasn't Billy Crystal related. And then that would just be a funny thing that would happen every episode is that I happen to keep reviewing Billy Crystal movies. but beyond that, I'm happy with it. And also it has, kind of been a good, I mean, really the stealth reason why I'm doing it is just because I want to keep iterating in some of the skills that I built with Raise the Dead before I really want to make another Raise the Dead. Mm.
Do you feel too locked in to Billy Crystal, or is that just a bit that you would have liked to
have done? I would imagine that, and forgive me for jumping in because I want to lock my prediction in before the reveal, but I would imagine that it's freeing that it's something that you don't have to care too much about. It's not so precious that you're worried about screwing it up. It's just like, it's like working out with weights. I don't have a strong emotion connection to weights. They're just the things that are hard to move that I go to the gym to do so.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it. Part of it is just being able to do a thing where I can just kind of take it wherever I want and I can refine it and I can keep making it its own thing. And it's just helpful to do a thing to launch the boat and then let it find its own voice. And it's low stakes enough because if people are like, "Hey, I hate the Billy Crystal podcast," I'd be like, "Cool, yeah, no, that's a valid opinion."
What about you? What do you got, Andrew? Nutty.
Yeah, you just had a big book, big book come out. What's up next?
Yeah.
So the official book release day was 3 days ago. For it was the first, so that was when the book officially launches. They had a pre-launch, which was a Kindle selection of the month, or Amazon Prime Reads selection, which was awesome. The book spent 2 weeks at like the number one spot, and then like most of the month, like at number two, because, you know, kids decided to read The Bad Seed. It's fine. Encourage your children to read. It's great. That's great, guys. Just do that. And the reaction's been fantastic. The book also has been on Amazon's charts, which is their own version of their like bestseller list. So besides being number one in Kindle, it's been there, and it just been a wonderful, wonderful launch for the book. I'm excited. People have been really, really enjoying it. And, you know, I continue to push. You know, now is actually the month where I actually even increase my promotion for it. I'm in the middle of writing another book. So it's been, you know, always end up having to finish a book right as I'm supposed to be promoting a book, which is probably just poor timing on my part. But I don't know what to say. I've been, you know, everything that I was hoping would happen with it happened. You know, everything that I figured I need to go do to go do, I would do. And working with a wonderful team has been awesome.
I got a question because I just noticed this on the listing. It seems like you can already pre-order the sequel. Do you have any insights on that? I mean, I guess it makes sense, especially in a world where you gave away the first book for free to a lot of people. Is that?
Yes. So one of the things that I love working with Amazon Publishing is they know a lot about publishing ebooks and digital and publishing. They're a company that started, obviously, when Amazon started publishing several years ago, their own books, their own titles, and doing that, it was because they said, you know, we've got a lot of knowledge on how the publishing industry works. The publishing industry by itself is very slow to change. And I've had great experiences with some publishers, but I'm a person that, you know, I started writing 8 years ago, or 9 years ago. So for me, I came up with a time when ebooks were a way that people read, that everybody bought their books via Amazon or BN.com or whatever. So for me, it's great to work with, you know, another organization that sort of came from that mindset. And one of the things that they do is they look like, okay, how do people buy books? What happens when somebody reads an ebook? Reading an ebook is different than a print book. You get to the end of a print book, you're like, cool, that's great. You set it down. You get to the end of an ebook, you have an electronic device there, and it can say, hey, do you want the next book from this person? And you can click to buy. And so with me doing series, it's been a great fit. So if somebody gets to the end of this book, there's the option. Do you want to get the sequel that comes out next year? And that's been phenomenal. That's how I launched the Naturalist series. You know, we did the Naturalist, and then we had, right after you got to the end of that, Looking Glass, you could pre-order that. And so it's been a wonderful way to continue selling books, you know, and it doesn't even have to work with a series. If I was like Stephen King or something, they could put like the next title there. So it's just very smart strategy. You know, we did that early on with our own self-published books.
So. Andrew, did Amazon do a book trailer for Naturalist?
I think they did. I think they did do a book trailer for Naturalist. And it's always sort of like, I don't realize what they've done until all of a sudden on my Twitter feed, I notice, like, because now they have a pretty cool one for...
Because, no, this one's awesome. Like, yeah, yes. I was so pumped to retweet this because this was like TV. Like good. This is, like, if this were like a television show, you know, there's like a few, like a the only reason why, you know, it's not a television show is that they don't show a
face,
a pretty face.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it is one pretty face close up away from being a show that I would see on USA. It looked so dope.
You know, you say that though, but I've had people on Twitter going, I can't wait to watch this. Like, well,
oh, I know. Yeah. I mean, no, that's my point. My point is like it looks television worthy. Like it is awesome. I was so pumped to see it.
Yeah. I've been, you know, book trailers, I think if you have the resources and capability to do it, are great. You know, I once pulled Justin into a book trailer project for a sequel to the Chronological Man.
Yep.
And it was did we spend a lot of effort on that?
It was very ambitious. It was very like it was like motion capture, and like there was a lot going on.
Was this costumes, the Martian thing?
Yeah.
The Martian Emperor.
And it was fun though, because like I look back and I think I just wanted an excuse to go make something, you know. But it was fun to sort of I go back, I look at that, and I'm like, man, I spent a lot of time on this. So I'm in a very oh, here we go. We're watching the trailer right now.
Yeah.
Where the caption shows the moon's being eclipsed by some flying saucer thing, shadows are moving across, and it's embarrassing how much time I spent photoshopping certain elements and creating like 2.5D object. There's Justin.
Oh, yeah. Little Justin. Houdini.
Roosevelt. So.
Was that a toy shotgun?
It was a toy shotgun.
Yeah.
It's my
amazing. Yes, Justin Robert Young being killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
murdered.
Great.
Oh, and Andrew.
I didn't want to. I didn't. You know, I do everything by myself, so it's either Justin or me.
Yeah,
it's going to play every character.
That's cool.
Like thinking back to the early days of e-publishing, self-publishing. This was fairly top of the line.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I look at this. I'm like, man, I should have just made like a Sky Captain, you know, sort of movie instead, and just gone with that sort of graphic novel look. That was fun. I mean, I'm looking at like, a lot of stuff I get was garbage. But I'm like, you know, it looks silly, but I'm like, I'm proud of what
I mean, it looks highly stylistic. It looks like it was going for a certain thing, and that thing has aged just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was looking for like my Sin City sort of 300 sort of graphic novel look to it. Cause I knew I could do that. I knew I could pull that up. I knew if I said, oh, don't try to make it realistic, try to make it look comic book, you'll be fine. Cause it just fit the genre. You know, that's fun. But now I just wake up and I look on Twitter and I'm like, wow, there's a book trailer. Cool.
Yeah.
Me. Yeah. Good job.
Well,
guys.
And also it's like, you know, that was all original art and original photoshopping. Like the one thing that is kind of OP today is you have so many of these super high quality stock video libraries that you can put stuff together and make it look good. Like since this is after things, we'll give a little pro tip, but Bryce was talking earlier about Artlist, which is a music library for royalty free music, and you just pay, it's like once a year or might even just be like once
for
like
us
full
it's,
stop.
It's $200 a year and it's unlimited music in unlimited videos. I think the only thing they have like stipulations on is they don't want you using it in podcasts because that gets very close to just republishing it.
Yeah.
They say like you have to have voiceover and you really shouldn't use the whole song. So it's made for videos, but it's it's very cool because other than that, it's very wide open. It lets us use
it. I'll tell you what. Well, I definitely used it all throughout Raise the Dead, but it was certainly not.
But you were talking about it. It wasn't like you were saying, like, welcome to cool music with Justin. Here's a
exactly.
full song.
Yeah.
Listen.
Right. Yeah.
And you were talking over it, and there were small bumps and stuff.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff. But they now have a video service, and part of their appeal is that they're not just clips. They are all cut out into clips, but they're basically like full scenes that you can take little bits and pieces from. So like that was like a big problem with stock footage before, was that you were always like taking a one little moment and you were trying to match them with other stuff, so it had to kind of be.
Oh, so this is a complete vignette where it's like it's a total story of a mother changing a diaper of a baby, rather than you know, just 10 seconds of a baby with a dirty diaper, then a separate clip of a different baby with a clean diaper,
and even then, I'm not sure whether or not I think that there's also just like it's a whole bunch of stuff with a baby. So it's not just changing the diaper, it's breastfeeding, it's the baby waking up, it's the baby laughing, it's, you know, like all like the mourning of a baby.
And TV's so now you can cut stuff in the chat makes I caught that reference. That was definitely an Ed Wood reference when he says this stuff is great, I could make an entire movie from this.
And that's something that Andrew did not have when he made that first thing. You know, yeah, there was no like just like super affordable shots of old New York or even New York now that you could, you know, put a few things in there.
You know, there were some stuff, but I didn't want to use it because when we did the G4 documentaries and stuff, we were using library stuff and things like that for that. And I was going through aerial footage and things like this. I just didn't want anything that looked like it was made from stock footage, to be honest. Like that was sort of my thing, was like, I think that you can, the smart thing is you use a hybrid, is you use some, you know, some stock and some original and you blend it together, and then it makes your production values look so much better. And it's one of the things I tell, like, you know, talk to like young filmmakers, stuff like, go shoot stuff and then, you know, you can go buy a cool, you know, really cool, you know, external shots of LA that you can intersperse within your thing, and use stock footage to do that. And you can build a scene out so much better. You can do an establishing shot out in front of a Chinese restaurant in, you know, San Francisco, and then go shoot the rest of it inside of your kitchen. And people are going to think that you spent way more. You just use that, just the right use of it all. Mm. You know, a collage, a tone poem, if you will. Gentlemen, do we have picks?
I don't think I have anything more interesting than what we already talked about outside of Rick and Morty. Did not like that first episode last night.
I'll double down on Artlist. Artlist is great. They have a lot of, I was kind of worried when I first started using it that it would be just like a lot of electronic stuff, but they have a pretty wide range of genres.
Oh yeah. Artlist. No, big time. Cause that's the biggest thing that I go for. My I'll double down on Artlist. There's a lot of like jazz stuff and stuff that like when I needed to kind of keep in at least tone aesthetic of the 1960s, it was very easy to do.
Yeah.
I actually like the Rick and Morty. And Brian, my question for you, do you ever watch the inside the episodes they put up right after?
On Rick and Morty?
Yeah.
No, I don't. And to be honest, I think I would like it more if I weren't so familiar with Dan Harmon's story circles and all that stuff. Diving into all the blog posts and all the think pieces and all that stuff, it was all familiar territory. And to have it all, you know, have a spotlight shown on it and to paint it red was just a bit beneath them to me.
Well, yeah, I don't agree with the story circle one. I think it's complete. It's another one of those sort of narrative BS things, techniques or whatever like this. I understand what he says by it, but I'm like, I don't agree with it. And I saw it when he had the circle in there or whatever, but he didn't write the episode. You know, they talked to the guy who wrote the episode.
Oh,
and
really?
Stuff. Yeah, no, Harmon didn't write it. So, you know, Harmon sits in a room with writers and says, let's do this. And so some of these, they bring in different writers for every episode. And so it was, you watch the behind the scenes, you get a lot about how like, oh, well, we wanted to do, the thing they wanted to address was the idea they didn't want to do another clip show that didn't matter. They didn't want to do a thing that was just, let's throw in a bunch of things that aren't canonical, because that's what they kept talking about. Not canon, not canon, not canon. And so it sort of was sort of an interesting, I would say it's worth watching because it will give you a different lens to look at it and sometimes take it apart. Because I was like, you know, my thing about the heist one was like, I know that like Harmon and Roiland are like, oh, heist movies are BS and stuff. It's like, you guys have a formula. I don't know if you know, I don't know if you guys realize it either, but like there is a very specific formula, and a heist movie is just like, all right, you know this formula. Now let's get into the characters. And the heist movie is often about something completely different than that plot structure. And I would say that to the whole, the plot circle thing, I kind of gets into one of my criticisms of it. Like, yeah, there's another thing going on here that's not in there. That's kind of the most important aspect that I think he grasps.
That's
intuitively
the difference between the two. Is the heist episode is watching a heckler take someone down on stage, and that can or cannot be good depending on how good the heckler is. Mm-hmm. But watching a heckler immediately turn around and say, "Also, I'm a piece of crap too, and I'm garbage, and everything I say is a lie." It's like, all right, you're just melting down, and I don't want to see this. That's not fun for me.
Which is weird because that's Rick and Morty's MO.
Well, certainly Dan Harmon's MO, but again, shining a spotlight on it just wasn't very fun for me.
Yeah, to me it was like the heist one. I'm like, I love that you guys are really passionate about this. I think you missed the point, but that's okay. It's so delightful to watch you rant.
Right.
You know, like when grandma swears, it's funny, you know, and like they're anyhow. But yeah, I would say that it's a shade of that version of that. But again, I love just, I don't know. I love to watch a thing and go, I completely disagree with it, but man, I was entertained. I think we're all the same way. So my pick is going to be, from a technical point of view, I moved into my little office here and I didn't want to go put like all of my podcast gear and everything else here and have the microphone stuff because the thing kept getting in the way. And so I ended up buying a much cheaper microphone, which is probably why I sound like crap, but it's been very useful because I got another thing to help with it. So I got the Toner microphone. I got this because it had the built-in little mount. It has its own little shock mount here, so when I hit the desk, it's not going to start making noises. And it had the built-in sort of spit screen. So this is, it's like a $50 or $60 microphone, which I like because it's got these other elements. Obviously, you want to have a really good mic body, which this is okay. But these other elements are just as important. You can have a great microphone, but if it's mounted to your desk and you hit every bump, every keyboard strike, it's going to be bad. And if you don't have the little screen here, then you're going to hear all the sibilation and stuff. So this Toner microphone stuff, I think for like $60 is great. And then the other thing, which I thought, oh, like $40, even better.
This is the TC777 USB version, TONOR.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the one I got. Then the other thing I got, which is super useful, is this USB to
Lightning
port. Okay, so thank you. So what's great about this is I can plug this microphone into my iPhone.
Hmm.
So if I want to do a live stream and I want to basically just chat away and have a better microphone, just use one of these cables and plugs it into there and you can use that. So that's my pick. So with, you can just improve the quality of what you're doing considerably for not a lot of money now.
Cool.
Nice.
Yeah, the Lightning port is, yeah, if you get the Apple one, it's going to cost the same as the whole microphone.
Very cool.
So, cool. Is that it? Everybody good?
Yup.
Good.
It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.